Welcome, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host. Well, today's just me, Ryan White. Dave McKelvin is, out doing something else. Thought it'd be a good one. We have with us today, world-renowned love doctor, Sean Weber. He is a family law attorney with Brave Weber and Mack. Again, their website, bravewebermack.com. He's got a great segment on his website called Love and Real Estate. That's surprisingly enough one of the things we're going to talk about today. He is an enormous advocate of the collaborative divorce process and has a wonderful track record of keeping people out of court. Sean, welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us today, I have Eric Atalano, loan consultant with New American Funding. Eric has a deep passion for the Wounded Warriors Foundation, which allows them the opportunity to both raise money and participate in, what'd you say, three or four in the past and a couple coming up mud runs that they hold, right?
Right. I will be doing my fourth Tough Mudder this October, and they're outstanding events.
Eric is here to talk to us today about how to get a home loan, the 10 most important factors. And I would imagine there's more than 10 important factors, but these are the top level stuff.
Absolutely.
Right? The most important things that theoretically, if you have all this in line, you may get some exceptions for the other stuff, 11 through 20. But this is the stuff you got to have squared away.
Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you both for showing up. And we are very much interested in Sean Weber has his goalpost theory that he certainly will go through, very appropriate here for ESPN. As well as his ebook, What's Love Got to Do With It? Again, it's on his website, bravewebermack.com. But he has created this Love and Real Estate Frequently Asked Questions based on, well, frequently asked questions, right? These are things that your clients have asked you, yeah?
That's right. These are questions I get asked all the time. Stuff that comes up when people are considering what the effect of their marriage or their relationship is going to have on the real estate that they own. People want to know that stuff.
And as we were talking here briefly, it's not just real estate. You mentioned a case with an insurance policy as well.
That's right. There's a new case that just came down. You guys know Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons. New case came down from the Supreme Court. It kind of shook things up a little bit in the family law community. And it's about a life insurance policy. But a lot of these questions apply to real estate and other kinds of property like a cash value on a life insurance policy.
So we certainly will talk briefly about that, but here, let's go through some of the questions now. If I own the property before we get married, well, this says does she, but let's say he or she, still get it if we break up?
So say that again. If I own
Sure.
the property before we got married, does she or he still get it when we break up? And the question is no. However, there's always a but.
However,
you know, there's always
but.
A yes but in there. If you think of community property law as goalposts, okay, and you have on one side date of marriage, and on the other side you have date of separation, meaning the date that you knew that the marriage was over, anything between those goalposts is going to be community property, with some exceptions which we can go over. Anything outside of the goalpost before the date of separation or after the date of marriage is going to be separate property. So if you purchase this house before the marriage happens, that's your separate property house. The only way that it can become community is if you do something to make it community.
Uh-oh.
And there's a lot of things that you can do. One is that you can actually do what's called a transmutation. That sounds like a science fiction term, but what it is you take, when you have a transmutation, you're actually turning community property to separate property or separate property to community property. And you could actually do a writing that says, I transmute this from separate property to community property. I want this to be shared with my wife or my husband equally. The other thing you can do is you can use community property money, for instance, your wages during the marriage, which most people do, to pay your mortgage. If you do that, that's going to create what's called the Moore-Marsden interest, based on two cases, marriage of Moore and marriage of Marsden. You're going to be paying down community or principle with community property, and that then creates an interest in the community in that house.
So certainly it is possible that if you owned a home before getting married and then got divorced, the spouse could have some financial interest in that home. I mean, it's very reasonable to make money and use it to pay your mortgage. I mean, we're assuming it's a principal residence, of course. It's a very reasonable assumption. That's what people do.
Yeah, most people pay mortgage, you know, make their principal pay downs with their community property wages. But, you know, if you do that, just know that every time you have a principal reduction from one of those payments, you're creating a little bit more of an interest in the community. And over time, if you have a long marriage, for instance, this could develop into a pretty substantial amount of money.
Well, you just said something that was interesting to me, principal buy down. So let's say I've got an interest-only loan. Okay, so no principal is being bought down. Mm-hmm. My wife and I both work. We put our money in the same pot together. We scoop out of that pot to pay the lender every month.
Mm-hmm.
Now what happens?
Well, now because you haven't made any principal reductions, it's just interest, and that's just going to be considered a gift to the community, or I'm sorry, a gift to the separate property, because you just paid interest. You haven't actually increased the community's equity in this house. And so, therefore, there's not going to be an interest for the community just for those interest payments. It's only going to be the principal pay downs and then the appreciation on those principal pay downs. Interestingly, I just had a case come up where the question was, what if the house drops in value? Am I going to get like a subtraction of the more margin interest? The answer is no. We're talking about appreciation only. We're not talking about depreciation.
Cannot double dip, huh?
Can't go backwards. Yeah, you can only go forwards.
So that's to assume that the principal buy down would be the only portion that the other spouse would lay claim to. So let's say, as an example, you bought a home for $200,000. It went up to $400,000. You got married. It went up. Then you lived together for 2-3 years, went up to $600,000, then you got divorced. You gained $200,000 in equity plus some amount of principal buy down while mm-hmm. you were married. I think what you're saying is the portion of principal buy down is really what the other spouse may lay claim to.
That's right. The portion of that principal buy down and then any appreciation that principal buy down experiences. You divide that by two. That's how much you owe the other spouse when it's over.
Okay. That seems very reasonable. I would imagine paying off that other spouse commonly requires either the sale of the home or a refinance, right? I would imagine you see that all the time.
That's true. And it depends on the amount of money we're talking about. And a lot of times what can happen is somebody can say, well, you know, I have my interest in this house. It's my house. But then you look at the more margin interest, it actually swallows whatever value you might have in the house. And you realize that
it's not much.
There's not much left when it's all over. The other thing that can happen is people make down payments on a house with separate property money.
Right.
During the marriage. So say you buy the house during the marriage, you intend it to be community property, but you had some money sitting in a stock account or something, cash sitting over here that you use for a down payment, which I'm sure our mortgage specialist here is going to hit on. You put that into your house, you get what's called a 2640 reimbursement. It's based on Family Code Section 2640, which means you get that back if there's a divorce off the top.
Oh.
But you don't get any appreciation. You just get the amount that you put in. And the community, if you think of the community as a separate entity from the person, the marriage gets the rest. Yeah.
Actually, it seems pretty reasonable, to tell you the truth. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Sean Weber. His website, bravewebermac.com. That's his website, bravewebermac.com. Okay. How long do we have to be married before the spouse is entitled to half of my stuff?
Good question.
I love that question because people think that, if I have a long marriage, that just means they automatically get half my stuff. I always think of that Eddie Murphy bit where he's talking about Johnny Carson and all his wives, and he's on the cover of the National Enquirer giving up half. It's not about the length of the marriage. It's about, was it separate property when you came into the marriage, or is it community property later? Did you transmute it? So these rules that we were talking about, the goalposts, the length of the marriage doesn't really have anything to do with it. It's the question of what is the character of that property as we came in, and then did I do anything to my separate property then to turn it into community property, like the more margin interest we were talking about?
Isn't there some 10-year rule that does something with respect to spousal compensation?
That's for spousal support.
Oh, support. Okay.
So when you're talking about a marriage of long duration, spousal support, or alimony, as some places call it, when you have a marriage of long duration, the court isn't going to put a termination date on spousal support jurisdiction, which means that you could effectively be paying your wife for your ex-wife for the rest of your life.
Well, I guess I meant I for some reason I thought the marriage of 10 years had some significance in terms of payout. Am I mistaken about that?
Not in terms of property.
Right, not in terms of property, but in terms
of spousal support. Because if you look in section 4320 of the family code, and I hate to drop just numbers,
wow.
But
I'm gonna flip that up right now.
Yeah, just open it right up. Go right on Google. Mm-hmm. If you look in 4320 of the family code, there's a whole list of factors, and one of them is the length of the marriage. And if you have a marriage of 10 years or longer, then that means that we're not gonna cut spousal support jurisdiction. If it's less than 10 years, then it's half the length of the marriage. Typically that the other party is entitled to receive as spousal support. So you're married 8 years, you get 4 years of spousal support.
I see. So to answer the question, how long do we have to be married before spouse entitled half my stuff? Essentially a day. I mean, once you're married, you get half it with the exception of spousal support. But you're talking about stuff here.
Well, unless it's separate property. If it's separate property, you get that back. It's just you're creating community property during the marriage, like your wages during the marriage, that's going to be half and half. That's going to be community property.
Makes sense. Makes sense. We're talking with Sean Weber, family law attorney, going over his love and real estate frequently asked questions. His website, BraveWeberMac.com. That's his website, BraveWeberMac.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with Eric Antolano, loan consultant with New American Funding, on how to get a home loan, the 10 most important factors ahead of us. When we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Sean Weber, family law attorney, going over his segment, Love and Real Estate, Frequently Asked Questions. His website, BraveWeberMac.com. That's the website, BraveWeberMac.com. Shifting gears here to Eric Antolano, loan consultant with New American Funding. Tell me, what's going on with the rate today?
Rates are very low, a low that we haven't seen in about a year, let's say. You're going to get really low rates on 30-year fixes below or at near fours on most conventional loans. And if you're VA or FHA, it could be lower than that. I mean, you're looking at the mid to high threes in most cases. So it's a really good time, I think. And, interest rates do a lot of good when they're in this area, and it could help a lot of people.
To reach out to Eric, his website is his name, Eric Antolano, ericatilano.com, ericatilano.com. So you sent me this chart here on seasoning requirements, but I'm going to call it the penalty box. So if you had filed Chapter 7, Chapter 13, short sale, foreclosure, or deed in lieu, there are all penalty box timing restrictions, meaning that you are essentially ineligible for a new loan without certain seasoning requirements.
Right. And the way I like to look at it, though, is the seasoning requirements for this is a lot shorter than what people think.
Okay.
They think that in a Chapter 7, Chapter 13, or short sales, that they have to wait 7 or 10 years. And a lot of times that's not the case. In an FHA loan, if you filed a Chapter 7, you're eligible for a purchase in 2 years. If it's a 13, 2 years also. If you foreclosed, you can buy again in 3 years. Short sale, it's the same, and depending on your extenuating circumstances, it could be sooner. Okay. A deed in lieu, which means that you've fallen behind on payments and they were about to foreclose, you only have a 3-year seasoning requirement. And if you're in a VA, the short sale's shorter by a year. It's only 2 years. Okay. So there's a lot of advantages when going into looking at trying to acquire a new loan, and you have experienced these phases in your life, which a lot of homeowners had. You don't have to stamp yourself with this huge time frame to recover. Okay, there's a lot of programs out there that are going to help you get back on your feet. Now, in regards to a conventional loan, you can get back on track with one of those in 4 years from a Chapter 7, 2 years from a Chapter 13, maximum 4. Okay, so go into the website, shoot me an email. If you've got some situations that you think that are prohibiting you from attaining a mortgage, I'll let you know if that's the truth or not and tell you what your eligibility levels are.
Well, let's put our focus here on the short sale and foreclosure aspect of the penalty box.
Sure.
And I would think that FHA and conventional are the most common loans out there. Maybe it's a good amount of VA here in San Diego because of our military population. But nonetheless, for FHA, 3 years, unless borrower was not late prior to short sale and was not trying to take advantage of the market. I have many situations where the lender required the borrower to be late. Like they would tell me, hey, you know what? I signed these loan documents. I'm willing to keep making payments. I need some help here. You know, I need to sell the home short. I can't pay him back the full amount, but I'm willing to make payments. And they tell me that they won't even talk to me until I'm 90 days late. In many situations, the lenders required that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they were ill-advised. And that's not just bad advice in general, but it does impact the credit report as well. And,
certainly.
And it really just puts a stronger stain on the borrower than necessary to attain it. Now, you know, to be eligible for a short sale, the bank has to agree that they're going to sell it at that below than loan amount price. And there is a certain system that goes into that. Now, how it's done exactly, I can't tell you because each institution has their own types of guidelines and procedures. Some of them are still coming, under fire for it. Bank of America and certain other banks are still getting hit on really hard for the conditions that were required for them to meet short sale, you know, approvals. But there is a case that I recently did help a client with who was forced to short sale her home because of the dissolving of the actual real estate property and her divorce. So due to the divorce, she was forced to sell and liquidate the property and relocate. So she wasn't trying to take advantage of the market. This was an extenuating circumstance, and she was eligible to purchase in just 2 years.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that in a divorce situation, that could be considered a hardship, which would enable
exactly.
you to be able to qualify for the short sale.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, she unfortunately had a spouse that was a heavy gambler. And put them in a real big financial restraint. And unfortunately, she just had to move forward with what the procedures were and had to liquidate her home. And at the time, the market was not healthy at all. And so she was able to bounce back. You know, she was a successful nurse and had a great income and career. She shouldn't have that punishment looming over her head over certain variables that were beyond her control.
So for a short sale, 2 years with extenuating circumstances, which like you said, a divorce, gambling spouse,
sure.
lost job, all those things would probably constitute extenuating circumstances. Really, whatever the lender agreed to for the short sale is probably the same reason you would use that would generally be an extenuating circumstance. It's good to hear. It's 2 years for a conventional loan. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Eric Antolano, loan consultant with New American Funding. His website, ericantolano.com. It's ericatilano.com. Going to talk about the 10 most important factors in getting a loan. And you've got 10 listed here. As I mentioned, there's probably more. Are these in any particular order? Like, is number one the most important? Number 10 the least important of the 10?
You know, they're all very, very important. But I think that something as a consumer, it really is important to constantly monitor your credit. Okay. Information is very easily shared and pretty easily stolen in nowadays with technology. Keep tabs on it. You get one free credit report every year. Get that. Make sure the information's correct. Make sure there is no errors and then catch up on it. Now, if you're looking to purchase and you have this in your game plan, start buying down your outstanding debt at least to 50% of the actual allowable amount on your revolving credit lines. Okay.
Okay. Let's back that up 1 second. You say we get a free credit report once a year.
Right.
How?
Well, you're going to go to little websites like myfreecreditreport.com, and in some cases, your bank will be able to provide it to you. I think Wells Fargo does that.
And by free, you mean I don't have to pay for it, or it doesn't hurt my credit?
I don't know if the actual inquiry is going to hurt your credit much at all, but they shouldn't charge you for your first report.
Got it. So whatever institution shouldn't charge you for it. If they do charge you for it, it's not, you know, we're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars here.
Right. And if you don't want to go to your bank, I would highly suggest going to Experian, Equifax and TransUnion's websites, and they should provide you a report from their site.
Okay, so check your credit report. That seems pretty logical.
Right.
But you mentioned something in there that seemed very technical, buying down your balances. What does
right.
that mean?
So let's say you have four credit cards and they're at 10,000 limits each,
okay.
and you know you're at you're over half the actual allowed amount that you've borrowed on each card. Well, okay. That's going to translate into you really spreading yourself thin. So the best way to efficiently manage your actual debt is to don't use more than 50% of the allowed amount on your credit cards. That's going to help you maintain a very healthy credit relationship. I like using the analogy, and when it comes to managing your credit, it is the same as college. You know, with the classes you take and the homework you do and the more tests you pass, you're going to get a better GPA. And with more classes, you're just going to have a healthier college life. But if you're not, you know, if you're spreading yourself too thin and you're not, you know, going to the class as much, your grades are going to take a hit and your GPA takes a hit, and that's a value to you. Don't do the same to your credit report. A lot of people will stretch themselves out, but go ahead, collect that info, look at what your balances are at, buy it down. You don't actually have to close them out to maintain a good credit report. If you can pay your balances off in full, fantastic. But, you know, you're talking about a small percentage that can habitually do that every month. So you can have revolving credit, and they want that relationship to stay very healthy, because in all seriousness, that's what's going to reflect a good credit score. It's not the fact you can pay everybody off in full. It's the fact that you can maintain it in a healthy way and very responsibly.
So you mentioned paying your cards down. I mean, I think we all get a pretty good understanding of what paying our credit cards off means. But if I'm to make an assumption here, I think what you're saying is when your balance on your card is less than 50% of the total available balance,
right,
it will not negatively affect your credit report.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Right.
Got it. So in your situation where I had four credit cards and I had, let's say, $6,000 on each one, over 50%, the two things that come to my mind are increasing my balance and getting a fifth credit card. Would those work?
No. If you're looking to get a new mortgage, don't go getting a new credit card and building your new relationship, okay? Because they don't know how you're going to treat that new relationship. So most often than not, when you get a new loan or you get a new account, it's going to bring down your credit score a little bit. So instead of doing that, apply more money to buying down the balances you currently have until you're at 50% or less than 50% of what that available credit is on the card.
What about increasing my credit limit?
Increasing your credit limit, not sure if it's going to impact you negatively or positively, but you should be able to just sufficiently manage the balances due and, you know, take that into account.
So in the end, nothing as good as just paying it down. I mean, that makes sense, obviously.
Yeah.
You're going to be less risky if you have less money owed to other people.
Yep.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Exactly.
We're talking with Eric Atilano, loan consultant, New American Funding. Eric, A-T-I-L-A-N-O.com. That's his website, ericatilano.com. Now, briefly here, we're going to skip number two and go to number three.
Sure.
Actually, make it number four, job verification.
Right.
Seems now, relatively straightforward.
Yeah, but it's kind of a biggie. A lot of people are going to, and especially now with technology and allowing yourself to earn money multiple different ways, you have to prove it, okay? Your eBay account where you're selling your comic books all month long, that's really not going to show a viable income stream, right? We want to see pay stubs. We want to see tax returns, and you make sure that you can prove it, okay? When we can document it that way, makes it everything a lot easier.
Well, I can certainly see how that would make life easier. So the days of stated income are behind us.
Yeah, you're not really going to run into many of those. So it's always good to, when you're maintaining or you've gained an income level, you know, make sure you have a record of it.
So I have a question. A lot of times I'll have a spouse after divorce, like we were talking about earlier. They need to refinance the house. What kind of income are you looking for in the spouse who's refinancing in terms of like spousal support or child support?
Well, you're going to want, well, we will want to see a divorce decree to see what the actual courts have determined to be a portion of her income or for her to receive or him to receive from the actual settlement. Then if, let's say, both parties are on the actual mortgage coupon, but only one party is refinancing it, we need to see that they've made the payments themselves coming from their separate accounts. So it's always smart that even in the course of a divorce or seeing one come in the near future to you, separate your accounts and your finances and start owning them individually, okay? If it comes from a collected pool of more than one person, it's hard for us to gauge who's the actual breadwinner in that area because it's from a joint account.
So that's a very good point. So if I've got a person that wants to keep the house, they want to refinance it in their name, so they take the other person off. They need to, sooner rather than later, separate that community pot of money.
Right. Now, if the courts hadn't decided to dissolve the property between the two, the party that is refinancing needs to prove to the lender and the bank that they have made the payments themselves, at least 12 months payments.
Wow. Okay.
When I've got a record of those 12 canceled checks, and let's say it's the husband keeping the property and he wants to refinance it, I can take the wife off the loan. We can record it in his name, make sure he's eligible for that refinance that way.
So I could even see, like, even in the case where it's the wife, that, say it's the wife is refinancing.
Sure.
And the husband's helping. As long as she's writing the check, if the husband's paying her to make those payments,
right,
she writes the check.
You're getting a little bit more detailed, too. So if he's helping her, let's say he's depositing the money into her account, but it's from an alimony, okay? The alimony has to be documented to be received for the next 3 years at least, all right?
Because
it's a form of income, and that's the term that of length that we will determine that as a viable income.
Interesting. Okay, so 3 years of alimony. Good to know.
We're talking with Eric Antolano, loan consultant with New American Funding. His website, ericantolano.com. One more time, ericantolano.com. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Sean Weber with Love and Real Estate, Frequently Asked Questions. Welcome back. ESPN 1700 AM is the Real Estate Radio Hour. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking with Eric Antolano, loan consultant, New American Funding. His website, ericantolano.com. One more time, ericantolano.com. Shifting gears over to the love doctor, Sean Weber. His website, bravewebermac.com. What's love got to do with it? Love and real estate, frequently asked questions. If I own this house with my parents and we get married, is he slash she entitled to my half?
So it's the same question as we were talking about earlier in the program, and that is, if it's a separate property house, does it automatically become community when there's a marriage? And the answer is no, it doesn't. But you're subject to, if you do things that can change part of it to community. For instance, if you're paying the mortgage down with community property funds, or if you're improving the house with community property funds, that could make the community have an interest, even if you own it with your parents, you know. And a lot of people do that. They'll have joint ownership. And so what I have happen a lot of times is I'll have the parents call me wanting to hire me to do a prenuptial agreement for the parties before they get married. You know, and obviously my client's going to be the spouse that's getting married, but, you know, they're doing the prenup because they're really concerned that whatever separate property they brought in, maybe it's family money or stuff like that, that that gets protected. And you can do that with a prenuptial agreement. You can make sure, make it very clear that this is my stuff and this is stuff that I'm getting from my parents or from whoever, and it's going to stay that way, and we're not even going to create community property on accident. For instance, the paying with paying the mortgage down kind of thing. You can actually waive that in your prenuptial agreement.
You can waive that?
You can. What people don't realize is you have a prenuptial agreement already when you get married. You may not have written it up. It may be a prenuptial agreement that was written in Sacramento by the legislature. It's called the Family Code. Okay? And what you're doing with the prenuptial agreement is you're just kind of changing the provisions of the Family Code so it can fit to, you know, what you want your marriage to look like. And I like prenuptial agreements because it forces the conversation between prospective spouses to talk about money. There's so many people that don't talk about the money before they get married.
And that's right. Common, I guess? They don't talk about it?
Yeah, you know, money's one of those taboo subjects. You know, we're in love. We've got stars in our eyes. We want to go pick out China and go register for stuff. And if you don't have that discussion about what are your expectations about the money, then that can lead to misunderstandings, and then people can get upset because they think maybe something they thought was going to happen isn't happening the way they thought it would.
Makes sense. Just tuning in, we're talking with Sean Weber, family law attorney with Brave Weber and Mac. Website, bravewebermac.com. Let's see. If I bought a house a week or two before we were legally divorced, do they still get half?
And probably not, because if it's a week or two before you're legally divorced, it's probably after your date of separation.
And that's an important thing, because you mentioned that previously, that the date of separation or the date of knowing the marriage was over is different than necessarily the date the divorce is finalized?
Yeah, there are only so many grounds in California for a divorce, and the one that almost everybody checks the box on is irreconcilable differences. You've heard that term. You can also check the box for incurable insanity. And I always kind of joke with people, do you want me to check that box? Your spouse incurably insane. But most people just go for the irreconcilable differences because it's the easiest to prove as a no-fault state. So the date of separation is the date that both of you knew or should have known that you had irreconcilable differences, that this marriage is really irretrievable. The problem is that's a very subjective term.
Very subjective.
What does that mean, and how do you prove that? And there's sometimes there's a significant amount of litigation that goes on just kind of trying to establish what the date of separation is. And it doesn't necessarily even need to be a physical separation. A lot of times people say, well, she moved out. Yeah, but you were still acting as man and wife and doing what men and wife do, and maybe you weren't really separated. Maybe you were going to counseling trying to make this work. Maybe you talk to each other about making it work and moving back in. Maybe it wasn't really a date of separation.
Yeah, I could see a huge amount of litigious points associated with determining when both parties should have known it's over.
Well, in this day and age, the way real estate is, it's not cheap. And sometimes people actually, even after the divorce, choose to live together. So the physical separation isn't necessarily what we're talking about. It's is the marriage irretrievably broken or not?
Right.
Interesting. So we're legally married, but haven't seen each other in years. I want to buy with someone else. Does he or she still get half?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Because you're married and you have community property. And so if you're buying something, maybe you haven't necessarily established a date of separation. Maybe the way you conduct your marriage is that you just aren't seeing each other. I think the chances are pretty good that you're going to be able to have that be separate property, but it's not really a safe thing to do. You probably want to either get divorced or do a legal separation, or you want to find this person and before you purchase the property, have them execute a quitclaim deed so that any interest they have, they're
doesn't come into. Yeah, right.
They're agreeing
right.
that this is your separate property.
Mm. Well, if you haven't seen him in years, I would imagine that's analogous to knowing the marriage is over.
One would think. And so I think the best, you know, if it's really. If you just have a fake marriage or it's just not even really a marriage, maybe that's the time to consider to file for the dissolution or to do a legal separation so that you don't have those financial ties.
I can see that. Does it matter if we got married in another state and bought property here?
Nope.
No. Doesn't matter at all.
That's the short question.
Simple answer.
Short and simple answer. There's even if you bought property in another state and you're here, we call that quasi-community property, which means we're still going to treat it like it's community property, even though maybe it's in New York.
Okay.
Mm. You're divorcing here in California, so we're going to apply California law to that, even if it's in another state.
Got it. So, yeah, nope.
Or answer. Another country, even. I just did a French divorce, and a lot of their property was in France.
Huh.
But they lived here, and they wanted to apply California law, so that was quasi-community property. We divided the property in France just like it was here in California.
Wow. Good to know. What happens to the property if we're married here but move to a different state and leave this one as a rental? I kind of think you just answered that question.
It's the same concept. Usually what happens is when you get divorced in another state, you're going to apply that state's law to your divorce. So if it's not a community property law state, you know, it'll be a different set of rules. Now, some people, when they do their prenuptial agreement, they actually write into the prenuptial agreement that they're going to do their divorce according to California state law. They'll actually put a choice of law clause into their prenuptial agreement.
So you can exercise that in any state?
So you could exercise it in any state.
Hmm. Interesting. Should the spouses stay as joint tenants or each own half as tenants in common or another way of owning it?
Well, that's an important question to ask, especially when we're filing for a divorce, because we probably ought to talk about what the difference is between a joint tenancy and a tenants in common, or a TIC is what some people call it. With joint tenancy, what that means is that the other spouse has an automatic right of survivorship should you die. Okay? Hmm. It's a wonderful estate planning tool. Mm-hmm. It's not so wonderful if you're in the throes of a litigious divorce. You know, you want your estranged spouse to automatically get your half of the property. Some people are fine with that. And so I always have to write a letter at the beginning of the case to my clients. Hey, do you have a joint tenancy? Do we need to sever that joint tenancy and turn it into a tenants in common? Because if until you sever that joint tenancy, it doesn't matter what happens in the divorce case, if you should predecease your spouse, that person will get half of, will get the entire asset.
I have a question. This has happened once to me before. I experienced it with a couple. They had a will or an estate plan on how to distribute the property, but the husband had refinanced the house and recorded it to contrary of how the estate was to be dispersed. So like his children were to get the home, but him and his wife were on the actual property. Is that an issue? Like when they refinance, should they always take into consideration that the estate, the, let's say, a will or the trust?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a probate attorney, so I'm going to say that with this. I'm a family law guy, and so I always refer my clients to probate attorneys in these situations. But that's something you always want to check on, is make sure that, you know, how your property is titled, does that conflict with what's in your estate planning documents or not? And if it does, then you probably need to have your estate planning attorney look at that and adjust what's in your will or in your trust so that it reflects what the reality is. Because if I'm not mistaken, the title is going to carry before a will carry. So if I have a joint tenancy and I try to will my half of the property to my children instead of to my spouse, the joint tenancy is going to carry, you know, and my spouse will get 100% of that property because it wasn't mine to will.
Mm.
If I had a tenants in common where it's just a 50% undivided interest, then I could will my half to whoever I wanted. I could will it to the Salvation Army. You know, but if it's a joint tenancy, that's a very powerful concept that you have to be aware of. And it comes up in a divorce because, you know, whenever intent goes contrary to what the title is, that's when you have to act.
That's when you have to act. We're talking with Sean Weber, family law attorney, BraveWeberMac.com is his website, BraveWeberMac.com. If I get divorced, can I tell the landlord I'm leaving and make my ex-spouse responsible for rent?
I don't know. We can talk about it.
Okay, ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Sean Weber, family law attorney with BraveWeberMac.com. We asked him, let's see here, if I get divorced, can I tell the landlord I'm leaving and make my ex-spouse responsible for the rent?
I mean, you can try.
Okay.
So when I said I don't know, I mean, it's just kind of a, if you signed a lease with your spouse, you know, your contract is with the landlord. And I'm just saying, well, you know, I'm getting divorced, I'm walking away, doesn't mean that you're not responsible for that lease.
I would agree.
And so,
and the same goes for credit cards.
That's right. Just because, just because we were talking during the break about the guy with the Nordstrom's card, and he said, I don't care about that. It was my wife's. If your name's on it, the creditor doesn't care that you're getting divorced. They want to get their money, and they'll come after both of you.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
All right, Eric. 10 most important factors getting a loan here, pre-approved.
Right. This is extremely important. It's a, when looking for a loan or actually a home to buy, it's fairly common that home shoppers go looking for the property first, fall in love with this amazing structure they want to raise a family in or live with their family in, and then go seeking a mortgage to qualify to own that home. And it's backwards shopping. Okay, being pre-approved or pre-qualified, number one, is no obligation to you and that lender. What you're doing is the best homework possible to make sure that you know the monthly payment involved to a purchase price. Now, once that's been solidified, you approach your realtor, and they will give you a catalog of the homes that fit that actual price so you can shop efficiently. You don't start looking around Rancho Santa Fe and then know that you can only afford $400,000 on a home. Okay, you know that already. But what most people do is they don't know what the difference is between a $300,000 home and a $500,000 home. And so they don't have a good shopping focus. When you get pre-approved, not only are you in tune with what the price is, but you know what your mortgage payments are gonna consist of. property taxes, homeowners insurance, HOA, if applicable, Mellow Ruse, if applicable. You'll also have an amortization breakdown. You remember, there's tax credits to owning a home. You've got your interest payment there. Take a look at what that monthly is. Do the math. Look at what your proposed tax credit on an annual basis could be. This is better structuring than just going to look at the house and then looking at the numbers and, oh, no, can I afford it? Can I afford it? No. Open up your eyes. Look at what the numbers are going to be and what you're eligible to afford based on your income of yourself or you and your spouse or whoever's on the loan. Be comfortable with that. And it's really good right now. With rates where they are, a lot of times you're going to be better than renting, and you're owning. Now, owning versus renting, in my eyes, is always going to beat renting, always, because you have your tax credits. You're paying yourself back for owning the most expensive thing you're ever going to own, your house. So you have these tax credits. They're structured real well. Go for it. Take it. Build a family with that. Rent, that doesn't happen. You're paying someone else's financial obligation. You'll never see that back in most cases. So be pre-approved. Learn what your actual amount that you can afford is, and then be in tune with what those items are engaging in your mortgage payment. Once you become more familiar with that, you're going to make smarter decisions.
We're talking with Eric Atalano, how to get a home loan, the 10 most important factors. His website, ericatalano.com. That's his website, ericatalano.com. Getting pre-approved seems, frankly, pretty obvious. I think most people out there know something they should do. I cannot tell you how many people don't.
Right.
They like looking at pretty pictures, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you're a very nice guy, Eric, but undressing financially in front of you is not that exciting.
Right.
People do not like to do that until they found the house. And I can't tell you how many times that's blown a deal.
Right. They prevent their vulnerability. Now, when you are prepared to buy the home, you feel prepared based on your own preparation guidelines. Hey, I got this great job. I've been working really hard. I'm getting overtime. I need to buy a home. That's great, but carry that confidence into sitting down with a mortgage professional and be prepared to expose a little vulnerability. I'm going to look at your credit report. I'm going to look at your pay stub, and I want to see your bank statements. These are a lot of things that are never presented when you're hanging out with your buddies and you're going to a Padre game. These are not topics of conversation people engage in on a healthy basis, on a consistent basis. It's very personable. It's very private. But remember, you're gaining the most expensive thing you'll ever own at this time of your life. And it could help to elevate you into better purchases and structuring your financial picture a lot easier. Gain a better understanding. I hope to work with the San Diego Financial Literacy Center and help veterans, college graduates, or even high school students learn how important it is to know the value of structuring your finances. Credit cards, they're fantastic, and some families give them to their kids as they're just going to college without real responsibility levels. They need to know the fear of mismanaging that. They need to know the value of managing it better. There's a client that I had helped purchase his very first home, 22 years old and in the Navy, an E5, extremely ambitious young man, came into a open house I was hosting. It's $1.2 million. This kid walks in and says, I don't know why I'm here, but I think I need to apply for a home loan. He was confident in himself to be able to apply for a loan. We went ahead and did the pre-qualification, found out he was approved. He purchased his first home at $300,000, VA loan, 100% financing. He had done his homework. He was really smart. He researched. His credit was great. He had a little bit in savings, enough to get through the transaction, and a great position with the Navy that helped his income and affordability of the loan. He is so excited in owning it now. He shares it with his friends. His friends are on the same page. It breeds a real positive vibe and atmosphere. So it's important. If getting pre-approved is your first homework assignment, approach it with a passion and learn more about it.
We're talking with Eric Atalano, loan consultant with New American Funding. His website, ericatalano.com, ericatalano.com. Can go there for his contact information to begin that pre-approval process. It is really an important first step in the entire home buying process. So you have here, do not use all your savings for the down payment.
Right. Now, a lot of people will have the idea, again, if you're a first-time home buyer, there's things that are alien to you. You know, oh, well, I only need, you know, X amount of dollars, that's all I'm going to gather. Well, remember, when you close escrow, you're probably going to want to add a little bit of a personal touch to your new place, okay? You're going to want to get some new things. You're going to want to make it look great. That's perfect. Make sure you have some of those assets. But most importantly, on top of your down payment, you're going to want reserves, okay? There's things that may happen to you that you cannot predict, and you want to make sure you can maintain your mortgage payments. Missing a mortgage payment is a terrible stain on your credit report, and it really impacts a lot of your financial future. So avoid that at all costs. Have 6 months in savings, 6 months payments, 12 months payments. You want to shoot higher than lower. You know, you don't need that much in a lot of the loan programs, but it's always healthy to keep in mind when buying something, I want some left over for myself. I want to make sure that when the lights go out or bulbs burst, I can go get it right when I need it. If my heater breaks down or anything in the property just needs to have a little more attention paid to it, you're more than well prepared. So don't go blowing it all on just the down payment.
That's good advice. Maybe it means you have to save for a couple more months. That sounds really important.
Yeah.
We're talking with Eric Atalano. One more time, his website, ericatalano.com, ericatalano.com, as well as Sean Weber, family law attorney with Brave Weber Mac. His website, bravewebermac.com. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, San Diego Spotlight.